A man that killed his whole family, then disappeared into the ether, never to be heard from again. Or was he? William Bradford Bishop Jr. ended up on the FBI's most wanted list. The question is he still out there? This is his story, today, on The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
William Bradford Bishop Jr. is a former United States Foreign Service officer who has been a fugitive from justice since allegedly killing his wife, mother, and three sons in 1976. On April 10, 2014, the FBI placed him on the list of its 10 most wanted fugitives. On June 27, 2018, Bishop, who would be 81, was removed from the list, making room, the FBI said, for a dangerous fugitive. However, he is still being actively pursued by the FBI. William Bradford Bishop Jr. was born August 1, 1936 in Pasadena, California, to LaBella and William Bradford Bishop Sr. He attended South Pasadena High School and received a Bachelor of Science degree in History from Yale University and a Master of Arts degree in International Studies from Middlebury College. Alternatively, Bishop has been reported to have a Bachelor's degree in American Studies from Yale and a Master's degree in Italian from Middlebury College. He also holds a Master's degree in African Studies from UCLA. After graduating from Yale in 1959, Bishop married his high school sweetheart, Annette Weiss, with whom he had three sons. He joined the United States Army and spent 4 years working. Bishop learned to speak four foreign languages fluently: Italian, French, Serbo-Corinthian, and Spanish. After leaving the Army, Bishop joined the U.S. State Department and served in the Foreign Service in many postings overseas. This included posting in the Italian cities of Verona, Milan, and Florence, where he did postgraduate work at the University of Florence. From 1968 to 1972, he also served in Africa, including posts in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia and Gaborone, Botswana, from 1972 to 1974. Bishop's last posting, which began in 1974, was at State Department headquarters in Washington, D.C., as an assistant chief in the Division of Special Activities and Commercial Treaties. He was living in Bethesda, Maryland, with his wife and three sons, as well as his mother, LaBella. So this is, of course, The Dark Side of Wikipedia. A very interesting character here, and there's some new developments in this story that we'll talk about a little bit further in. But anyway, you like our show, we'd love you to help us stay on the air, become a Dark Sider, get access to our final chapters, advanced episodes, all that. Patreon.com/Dark Side of Wikipedia to do that, or on our website, darksideofwiki.com. Click Become a Dark Sider. That's what helps keep this thing on the air. It's Tony and Carol Hughes with you today. And Carol actually sent me this over the weekend, the link to the news story. And I just kind of got sucked into it.
Well, and it gets interesting. Like, and I didn't dive deeply into this story. It's where it ends up, yeah, which is pretty interesting. But like, I lost track of how many degrees this mm-hmm. guy has. Like, he's incredibly smart.
Yeah.
Like, he had multiple master's degrees and undergraduate degrees
mm-hmm.
and goes to Italy and studies there.
Can speak too. Five languages. I mean, he's like, if you're not a moral person, or if there's something that's not quite right with you, that can become insanely dangerous. You know, and
or you can work for the government, yeah, and it works out quite well.
Exactly. It can either be used one way or it can become used the other way. And I guess he at some point used it both ways for doing well. But at the same point, then it's like, you know how to evade anything and everything because you're that smart. And he's obviously done it for quite some time and is still, I guess, out there. possibly, unless he's dead, which we don't know.
Could be.
But at 81, I can understand why they maybe said, okay, you're not on. I was surprised he was on the FBI's 10 most wanted list until that age. Not that I look at the FBI's most wanted list ever, but I always just kind of assume it's going to be, you know, younger.
Kind of rotate through.
Yeah.
It's like that guy gets replaced by that guy. He's worse.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I always think. Like, okay, that guy is way worse than number eight, so we're going to put him here, and he goes there, you know.
Debuting this week on the countdown from wherever the hell he's from is Bradford Bishop. He's a man that says, "Dear Casey, I killed my entire family, and now I'm really depressed, but I've changed my identity 32 times. I've learned 4 more languages. But Casey, what would make my day is if you could play Somewhere Out There." Because Casey, I know somewhere people are looking for me. Bradford, here's your long distance dedication.
Somewhere out there.
It was kind of weird because I was doing the female part and you were doing the male part. That was
one of the Neville, Aaron?
Aaron Neville. Aaron Neville. And it was Aaron Neville and
Linda Ronstadt.
Yes. Okay. It was Linda Ronstadt. Yep.
Because he would be like, somewhere.
Where dream? I can do a pretty good Aaron Neville in karaoke. Anyway, let's continue on with this story because somehow we got there.
Very few people can sing like Linda Ronstadt. I was not going to go there.
On March 1st, 1976, after learning he would not receive a promotion he had sought, Bishop told his secretary he did not feel well and left his office in Foggy Bottom. Police believe he drove to his bank, where he withdrew several hundred dollars, then to Montgomery Mall, where he bought a sledgehammer and gas can. He also filled the gas can in the tank of his 1974 Chevrolet station wagon at an adjacent gas station. From there, he drove to a hardware store where he purchased a shovel and pitchfork. Bishop returned to his home in Bethesda between 7:30 and 8 p.m. Police believe his wife was likely killed first, then his mother, as she returned from walking the family dog. Finally, his three sons, aged 5, 10, and 14, were killed while they slept in the upstairs bedroom. Bishop allegedly drove the bodies 275 miles in the station wagon to a densely wooded swamp about 5 miles south of Columbia, North Carolina. On March 2nd, he dug a shallow hole where he piled the bodies and set them ablaze with gasoline. Found with the burned bodies were a gas can, a pitchfork, and a shovel with the label of OCHHDW, which was determined to be from Pooch's Hardware. Bishop is known to have purchased tennis shoes at a sporting goods store in Jacksonville, North Carolina, later that same day. According to witnesses, he had the family dog with him and was possibly accompanied by a woman described as dark-skinned. On March 10th, a neighbor of Bishop's contacted police after not seeing the family for some time. A detective found blood on Bishop's home front porch and on the floor and walls of the front hall and bedrooms. Dental records were used to confirm that the bodies found in North Carolina were of Bishop's family. On March 18th, Bishop's station wagon was found abandoned in an isolated campground in Elkmont, Tennessee, at the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, a few miles from the Appalachian Trail and about 400 miles from the site where Bishop's family was buried. The car contained dog biscuits, a bloody blanket, a shotgun, an axe, a shaving kit with Bishop's medication, the trunk spare tire. It was also full of blood. A witness believed the car had been there since anywhere between March 5th or the 7th. Police theorized that Bishop joined the flow of hikers on the Appalachian Trail and attempted to follow his scent with bloodhounds, but without success. The following day, a grand jury indicted Bishop on 5 counts of first-degree murder and other charges. So it gets dark pretty quick when you burn your family alive in the swamp, but what's the motive? What the hell?
Like, okay, so why is it that story isn't so well known?
Mm-hmm.
And then like a Jeffrey McDonald guy who I don't know. It's still debatable. Did he or didn't he kill his family? But sure. Like that one's had movies made about it, multiple documentaries. And then this guy does a horrific crime. And how am I not more familiar with it?
Maybe. I mean, it was quite a long time ago. I mean, this is not even like the, you know, 60s, 70s.
But like In Cold Blood was too. And,
sure.
Well, maybe it's because I live in Kansas. But I mean,
yeah,
everybody knows about that story. You know, it's a horrific crime. And he was on the top 10.
It is kind of surprising that nothing's ever been made of this like movie. I mean, I know there was like
something. There was like there's got to be an unsolved mystery or something that we haven't seen yet.
I think he was on an episode or the story was, and I believe there was a doc made about it in about 2011. But that was about it. This was like never, as far as I'm aware, ever turned into like, you know, an In Cold Blood type thing where it's a book or a movie or anything like that. It's just,
like he just disappears.
And maybe that's part of it too, is because nobody's known where is he. Is there going to be more to this story because he's never been found?
Which is why you want to get the word out.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's an interesting one. I think now that that's the news story of the relation that has come out, and we'll talk about that in just a bit. I wonder, you know, if this will get on more people's radars, all the like the amateur detectives out there that end up solving cases better than professionals half of the time. Just because it is such a bizarre story. And I don't know. I think maybe we'll see some more traction on this. Let's continue into the story and the psychology and the motives and stressors. Bishop's motives have never been fully explained. An article in the Washington Post reported that there was no evidence of infidelity or financial or job problems. Although Bishop had been passed over for a promotion, there was no work or history of work-related issues. His being passed over had been described as the first glitch in the storybook tale. It's been reported that Bishop's career had caused some marital tension. He was unhappy at his desk job and interested in another foreign posting, but his wife, Annette, was reluctant. She had begun to study art at the University of Maryland despite Bishop's desire for her to remain a stay-at-home mom. Most sources agree that the Bishops were experiencing some financial issues, but there had been disagreement as to their severity. The Post reported in 1986 that the issues were mild and familiar to most upwardly mobile families. John E. Douglas described them as nothing terribly unusual for people in their 30s living in that kind of neighborhood. In 2013, Bethesda Magazine reported that the Internal Revenue Service had been auditing the family's taxes due to financial troubles. The existence of an audit has not been confirmed by the IRS or the FBI. The FBI states that Bishop is an avid outdoorsman who enjoys camping and hiking and reports that he had a pilot's license from when he was stationed in Africa. He also enjoys riding motorcycles and working out every week. Bishop has a history of depression and insomnia, having been afflicted with both conditions and taking Cerax in the time leading up to the murders. He's fond of dogs. He enjoys scotch, peanuts, and spicy foods. Bishop has a 6-inch vertical scar on his lower back from surgery, a cleft chin, and facial mole on his left cheek. He may have had his father's Smith & Wesson M&P 38 special revolver with the serial number C981967 in his Yale class ring with him when he vanished. He's also believed to have taken his diplomatic passport with him, as the family's diplomatic passports were all found at their home, but his was missing. Bishop has had approximately 1 week of advance time before the authorities began looking for him. It's been suggested that he could have traveled on his diplomatic passport. The FBI special agent in charge, Steve Voigt, stated in 2014 that neither Bishop's wallet nor passport have ever been found. It's also been speculated that Bishop may have had intelligence training in the 1960s, which may have helped him evade detection in 1976. Since 1976, Bishop has allegedly been sighted a number of times in various European countries, including Italy, Belgium, England, Finland, the Netherlands, Germany, Greece, Spain, Sweden, and Switzerland. Three most credible sightings, noted by the United States Marshal Services, are in July of 1978, a Swedish woman who said she had corroborated with Bishop while on a business trip in Ethiopia reported she had spotted him twice in a public park in Stockholm during a span of 1 week. She stated she was absolutely certain that the man was Bishop. She did not contact the police at the time because she had not yet realized he was wanted for murder in the U.S. In January 1979, Bishop was reportedly seen by a former U.S. State Department colleague in a restroom in Sorrento, Italy. When the colleague greeted a bearded man eye to eye, asking him, "Hey, you're Brad Bishop, aren't you?" The man, responding in a distinctly American accent, "Oh no," and fled. On September 19, 1994, at a Basel train platform, a neighbor who had known Bishop and his family in Bethesda was on vacation and reported that she had seen Bishop from a few feet away. The neighbor described Bishop as well-groomed and said that he was getting into a car. So I wonder how much of this story has been used as the inspiration for other characters, though, in popular culture over the years, whether it be, you know, Breaking Bad or other writings and things of that nature.
Well, my God, the guy is certainly qualified to go to Europe and blend in.
Sure.
He knows all the languages.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it definitely could be used as inspiration for any number of movies
mm-hmm.
and books. But, you know, so what year did the murders happen again?
I'd have to look back. I believe the 50s or the 60s, early 60s, late 50s. Ago. Yeah.
So I think then creating falsified documents
not hard.
Would be a whole lot easier than now.
Yeah.
So I think you probably could get I remember my dad's first Visa card was it just said Visa. It was the most basic thing you'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And you could so easily steal it. And, you know, people just wrote the numbers down back then. They didn't have anything to even, they would just write it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, never use it. But, you know, so think of how easy all of that shit would have been back then. Just make your own passport.
And by the time you get caught,
become a new person, you can make that.
Yeah.
My fake ID, my first fake ID was super easy.
Yeah.
We made it ourselves.
And by the time you get caught.
And I got into bars and drank with it.
Sure. And by the time you get caught with it, or any of that, or the fake passport or the Visa card or whatever, you're still relying on the mail system. It's being mailed.
Oh,
these
yeah.
receipts are going in. And then Visa will, you know, the merchant gets paid and all. It's like, that's not, I mean, so by the time that happens and somebody says red flag, they're long gone.
Yeah, there was no flags, you know, for months.
No. It's just, is it amazing that there wasn't more fraud going on than there was? I mean, I know fraud's a huge thing, you know, today, obviously, and it can get pretty bad with things online, but I don't know. Were we just at a different place in time where people were just more honest or what?
And I think a guy like that had the knowledge on how to, he was a smart man. And he knew what it would take to blend in and disappear.
Yeah.
And live a life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he could be dead now, but, you know, I fully imagine he lived a long, full life.
And he got away with it, you know?
Because it's just not like it is today. You can get scanned at the airport here and all of a sudden you're flagged, you know, before you even board a plane. Like, you don't even get into the airport.
No. It was a different way of being able to live. And it just blows. I mean, it blows my mind. I can only how much more imagine it blows, you know, the mind of people even younger than me, too. Because it's just like this. Yeah, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it hasn't always been like this.
No. Let's continue into the possible current whereabouts of Bradford Bishop. In 2010, authorities believe Bishop was living in Switzerland, Italy, or elsewhere in Europe, or possibly in California. He may have worked as a teacher or became involved in criminal activities. Authorities revealed in 2010 that before the murders, Bishop had been corresponding with federal prison inmate Albert Kenneth Baxton in the United States Penitentiary Marion. Though it's unknown why or how, Bishop evidently had instructed Baxton to send letters to his State Department office address America's Most Wanted posted the last letter on its website, which Baxton mailed 16 days after the murders without knowing that they had happened or that Bishop was a fugitive unable to receive mail at his office. Baxton died in 1983 before law enforcement discovered his connection to Bishop in 1993. In 2014, the body of an unidentified man resembling Bishop, who had been killed by a car while walking along the Alabama Highway in 1981, was exhumed by the FBI. A DNA test indicated the man was not Bishop. In 2011, the FBI used fingerprints to determine that reports that Bishop had died in Hong Kong or France were false. In 2014, authorities stated Bishop was probably living in plain sight in the United States, avoiding discovery by avoiding arrest. Being arrested would enable law enforcement to run his fingerprints and catch him. That same year, at the request of the FBI, forensic artist Karen Taylor created an age progression sculpture to suggest Bishop's projected appearance at about age 77. Using Taylor's sculpture, several alternative images were created by Lisa Shepherd to show the addition of facial hair and glasses. After the initial case, the Bishop case was the subject of articles in national publications like Reader's Digest and Time, Milestone Anniversaries. It was followed on an ad hoc basis by the Washington Post, the Washington Star, the Washington Times, as well as local Washington, D.C. television stations. The case was featured on television shows such as NBC's Unsolved Mysteries, ABC's Vanished, and Fox's America's Most Wanted. Bishop was profiled on AMW website 33 years to the day since his family's bodies were discovered. With a new age-enhanced bust of him with facial hair, a German TV show also featured the case on its 250th episode, November 6, 1992, to find possible evidence of Bishop living abroad. Ballet dancer Jacques Ambrose revealed in his 2011 autobiography that as a teenager, he had lived with the Bishop family for a short time in South Pasadena, California. This situation resulted from Bishop's mother's love of the ballet and D'Ambrose's engagement near South Pasadena with a traveling ballet troupe. He remembers Bishop as very intelligent, recited, and intense. They played chess together. D'Ambrose remained in regular contact with Bishop's mother via mail and international phone calls through the 1960s and 1970s. Now, they never met during this time period. D'Ambrose met Bishop's wife once. So the Bishops were newlyweds visiting his parents' house in South Pasadena before she announced her first pregnancy. In February of 1976, when D'Ambrose was scheduled to perform at the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, LaBella invited him and his wife Carrie to spend Sunday night, February 29th, at the Bishop's home in Bethesda. D'Ambrose canceled his appearance at the last minute due to a foot injury, but failed to notify the family. But a week later, he saw a newspaper reported the five burning bodies in North Carolina. It occurred to him that LaBella had not contacted him to express concern about his absence. D'Ambrose subsequently wondered whether his planned visit on February 29th and March 1st would have prevented the murders or resulted in him and his wife being killed as well. In early April of 2014, WRC-TV in Washington, D.C. launched a webpage to display multiple investigative reports and extensive information on the Bishop case. This included samples of Bishop's handwriting, fingerprints, dental records, and previously unseen Bishop family videos. On July 27, 2014, the search for Bishop was a featured story on The Hunt with John Walsh on CNN. The titular host of the program has described Bishop as a sociopathic, cold-blooded, narcissistic killer, as well as a horrible coward bully. So, he's gotten around a little bit, or so it seems, over the years, with people seeing him, people recognizing. What I'm still just stuck on is the motive here, because I'm not finding it.
And I think that's the mystery. I don't think anyone knows.
Yeah.
Which is so weird. Like, normally there's another woman, or you figure out something.
I mean,
to not figure out anything in the investigation, Or you figure that he's been embezzling. You find out he's got the woman on the side, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Normally those things kind of come to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't.
Yeah.
So maybe he just snapped, but then just snapping, he went through a lot of steps.
Mm-hmm.
You filled his car up, got the gas tank, went and got a shovel, got the axe. You know, he had an errand list.
Kind of on a mission, it seemed.
And his poor mother's out walking the dog and comes in. Like, it was so normal. You know, there was no threat. She's just out walking the dog.
Do you think he's dead and these reported sightings of him over the years were just wrong? And
that's so hard to say.
Like, was there something else here involved?
I mean, I would know, but.
Well, I mean, that's what I wonder about with this case. We're all going in this looking, how did he do it? Why did he do it? Maybe, I don't know. There's another part we're going to get to here in a moment, but unless there's something else I'm missing, was he the victim of something? I mean, did somebody go in there and kill everybody, and including him, and then took the car up this way and made it look like he was this horrible human being?
But he was the guy who went and bought all the shit, so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you punched a hole in that one.
Maybe they forced him to buy all this stuff.
Well,
weirder things have happened.
Go in the store, buy it. Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could still kind of make that argument. Was there something going on where he was captive and he was, you know, told you have to do this, you have to do that, and you know, did parts of it? I don't know. I mean, there's just so. It gets so twisted. You know,
and I wish I could say that what an unusual case, a man kills his family. But it's not. And normally there's a reason, like he wants to be, everybody's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. And he thinks he can get away with it.
Yeah.
This guy thinks he can just get away. And he did.
Yeah.
Like he just didn't get away with it. He just walked away from the whole world.
I guess that's how you do it if you're going to do that. I mean, rather than sticking around going, I'm innocent, I guess disappearing worked for him.
But don't you think back then it wouldn't be that hard?
Not at all. No. Today, impossible, you know, or nearly impossible. But yeah, I think it was right place, right time for him to be able to do that and get away. And he aged, and then it became even harder for anybody to recognize or find him. And by the time the technology was that much stronger and there to find him, he was already so blended into.
So long gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it's.
Because this is truly a where in the world case could he be?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because the guy spoke so many languages and he's very, very smart. And so he could, blend in pretty well. I mean, he might have an American accent, but he's speaking the language.
Go get a cabin somewhere in Germany or whatever, and there you go. I don't know if that's easy to do.
I don't either. And where did he get the money?
Yeah. Well, because he's got to, continue to make some sort of living to support wherever the hell he's going or doing.
But why then was he in connection in correspondence with the guy in prison?
Yeah, that's another weird
what
one.
What are they talking about?
They're all trying to find Carmen Sandiego, and Bradford just got messed up with that bitch, and shit got really real.
Shit got really real.
Where in the world is Bradford fucking Bishop? It'd be kind of not appropriate for the children's PBS version of the show. But so the next chapter, and we're going to talk about this in the final chapter, this is a fairly new headline. Well, by the time this airs, if you're a dark sider, you will you'll get access to this pretty close to when the story broke. But when this airs, it's about a month or two out. Adopted woman in North Carolina learns biological dad is family annihilator Bradford Bishop wanted by the FBI.
That's the headline that caught my attention.
Family annihilator. Like, that's some Terminator shit right there. But that's what we're going to go into in the final chapter. We'll talk about that and read that story if you want to hear it. Become a Darksider. That's a supporter of our show. Go to patreon.com/darkside of Wikipedia. Sign up there. Get access to all the advanced episodes, all the final chapters. And it's going to be an interesting second part to this. So Carol and myself, we'll see you over there on the final chapter. Again, patreon.com/darkside of Wikipedia to sign up and get it. We'll see you there. Thanks for listening.